Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema for Malka Bat Simcha and to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai, Pesach Vanser, Ruven Hoffman, Bari Hoffman, Harab Meir Kahana, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, of course we have the elections coming up for the Israeli Knesset in another couple of days, this Tuesday. The Israeli Knesset being the Israeli parliament. And we have the question of who will be in power, the phony right or the left, or the open left. And who is really worse for Israel, the phony right or the open left? Now, the open left in Israel are Jewish anti-Semites who want to go back to the pre-1967 suicidal borders, who want to surrender even Jerusalem, Israel's capital, to the Arab Nazi enemies that want to destroy the Jewish state and the Jewish people. They hate Judaism, they hate the Torah, they hate everything holy and sacred, and they're just evil, vicious, self-hating people. That is the open left. That's the Labor Party. They call themselves now the Zionist camp. They're in reality the anti-Zionist camp. And everything they do is a con and a lie and deception and evil and horrible. On the other side, you have the phony right, which pretends to be against those things and pretends to be for Israel and for the Jewish people, but in the end winds up implementing the same programs of the left, sometimes more effectively than the left. Because when the left tries to retreat and tries to surrender land and tries to expel Jews, everybody in Israel is in an uproar and calls them traitors and everybody, including the Likud and all the people on the phony right, all oppose them, and everybody starts fighting back, and there's a lot of resistance when the left tries to do it. But when the phony right tries to do the same exact things that the left wants to do, there's no resistance. The resistance, because then they say, well, look, if a right winger like Benjamin Netanyahu is willing to do this, maybe it's not so bad. Maybe we shouldn't be resisting. So the phony right, in many ways, is able to implement the evil programs of the left far more effectively than the left. And there may be some truth to the fact that the phony right doesn't want to do what the left wants to do. I don't think Netanyahu wants to go back to the pre-1967 borders, but under pressure, he has proven that he will cave in. So the question is, who is worse? People who openly have told us that their goal is to vivisect Israel on the left, but we know that they would have a hard time carrying out that agenda because there'd be a lot of resistance from the Israeli people to that terrible attempt to basically dismember the Jewish state. Or the phony right, who say they're against it, who claim to be against it, and who may genuinely not want to do it, but under pressure might do it. And if they do it, they would probably do it more effectively than the left. So who is worse? You know, it's a dilemma that we have every time there's an election. Both the left and the phony right deserve to be defeated. Neither one of them deserve to be in power. The only question now is, who is the lesser of the evils? Because we have no one running who is good. No one. Not one party, not one leader, no one running that is good. No one. Baruch Marzel, who runs claiming to be a Kahanist, is telling us that Netanyahu is a right-winger and that we have to have a right-wing government and we have to make sure the right wins. And who does Marzel define as the right now? Benjamin Netanyahu, the Likud, Naftali Bennett, the Jewish Home Party. That's who he defines. That's the new right. That's the new Kahanist. That's what the so-called Kahanist now says is the right. So there is no one really standing up for the truth. No one. Everybody's diluting things and everybody's dumbing down things and everybody's appeasing and everybody's compromising and caving in. Everyone running is doing that. This election really shows how sad it is, how unbelievably sad it is for the Jewish people and for the world that we're not running in the election, that I'm not allowed to set foot in Israel, and that we're not running in the election. How criminal and how sad it is, and what a generation we live in. If I were running, it would be a different ballgame. I would tell the truth about the left, and I would tell the truth about the phony right. I would expose all of them. Netanyahu now says, how dare the left say I shouldn't build in Jerusalem? If you can't build in Jerusalem, where can you build? If Jews can't even live in Jerusalem, where can they live? That's what Netanyahu said in a speech that he gave tonight. a speech at a huge rally that they had in Tel Aviv tonight. But Netanyahu, that phony, lying hypocrite, has frozen Jewish building in Jerusalem and has told Jews they can't live in Jerusalem. Netanyahu has done that because Obama told them Jews are not allowed to live in Jerusalem. So he has frozen building in Jerusalem worse than left-wing governments. Now, would he surrender Jerusalem? He doesn't want to surrender Jerusalem. I believe that. I believe him when he says he doesn't want to surrender Jerusalem. But he gives in to I don't think he wants a freeze Jewish building in Jerusalem either. He gives in to pressure. I don't know who's worse in the end. Would Buzhi Herzog and Tzipora Spitzer or Tzipi Livni, would those animals on the left, would they actually try to surrender Jerusalem? I think they will. I think they will try to do that. So we have danger from either side. They're both a nightmare. They're both very bad. And if only there was just one party, one voice, at least one party telling the real truth for a change. There isn't any party, any leader telling the truth. That's a terrible, terrible tragedy for the Jewish people, an unbelievable tragedy for the Jewish people. Unbelievable. And that's because I'm not in Israel and I'm not running. And I hate to say it's because I'm not in Israel. You know, Chaim ben Pesach, you're the only one who knows the truth. I'm not the only one who knows the truth. But in this particular election, if I were running, I'd be the only one telling the truth. I wish there were other people out there also willing to do it, but they aren't. Baruch Marzel could do it if he wanted to. The Supreme Court was going to allow him to run. But he's chosen to say, no, Eli Yishai, the Shasnik, the leftist Shasnik he's running with, and Netanyahu and the Jewish Home Party, they represent the right. We must have a government of the right, he's saying, as if this is the salvation of Israel. That's the new Kahanist position? That's the Kahanist spokesman speaking like that? That Netanyahu, who froze Jewish building in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem for 6 years, represents the right? Netanyahu, who says he's for a so-called Palestinian state, represents the right? Netanyahu, who is allowing Muslim terrorist Nazi Iran to build nuclear bombs that are aimed at setting off a nuclear holocaust against the Jewish people, God forbid, that this is the right? This cowardice, this appeaser, Netanyahu, he's the right? We have no one to stand up and tell the truth. No one. That's the tragedy. And it's a situation we're faced with in every election, until I'm able to go to Israel or until we're able to run people. If we had enough money, if we had a bigger budget and more money, the situation would be different. But this is what the situation is because of our limited resources. That's what the situation is. That's the reality. We have to reach as many people as we can. And we have to wake people up as much as we can. That's the only thing that we can do at this point. And that's our obligation. We're not allowed to be silent. Now, I have not made videos criticizing Baruch Marzel, like I'm doing on this program now. I'm doing this on this program now because I know that very few people who listen to this program are going to be voting in the Israeli election. You know, most of you are don't live in Israel, and I know that I'm not really going to be influencing things speaking to you in English on this program. But if I did it on my Hebrew videos, if I started criticizing him on my Hebrew videos, that would influence things, and I'm not doing Hebrew videos against him. I'm not saying what I'm telling you now on Hebrew videos because I don't want to hurt him. Even though I don't like what he's doing and I'm disappointed in him, I don't want to hurt him. And I don't want to hurt his campaign. And I'm not doing videos against the other parties in Israel that are part of the phony right, just in case the open left will actually wind up being worse. Right now, I'm not really doing videos against them. But as soon as the election is over, we've got a very, very serious challenge on our hands. If we don't wake the Jewish people up, we're in a lot of trouble. We're in a lot of trouble, and no one else will do it. If not for us, no one else will do it. No one else. And that is the real truth. That is the real truth, because we're the continuation of the truth that our beloved leader, Harav Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, we are the continuation of the truth that he was telling to the people of Israel when he was in the Knesset. No one else is continuing his legacy. No one else. Marzel admitted, by the way, that he's not a Kahanist. When he went in front of the Supreme Court, he and Itamar Ben-Gvir, his attorney, said he doesn't agree with Rabbi Kahana anymore, that he's changed, that he no longer agrees with Rabbi Kahana's views. That's what he said. And of course, all the Kahanists in Israel, naturally they excuse it. They say, well, he has to say that, or he doesn't have to say that. They were going to let him run anyway. They were clearly going to let him run anyway. The decision to let him run was almost unanimous. There's no doubt he was going to be allowed to run anyway. So this was completely unnecessary, and all of the other cutting corners that he's doing is unnecessary, but he wants to be part of the so-called mainstream. He wants to be accepted by the establishment. And you don't change history by doing that. How can we wake the people of Israel up if we don't even tell them the truth? If we don't have even one voice that tells them the truth, how can we possibly wake them up? I mean, if we're not telling the truth, how is anybody ever going to know the truth? The truth is, it could be a lot better, so much better for the Jewish people. We could create paradise on earth in the state of Israel and in the land of Israel, if only we had true Jewish leadership that did what a true Jewish leader is supposed to do. Now, we are in touch with other people in Israel who are not running in this year's election, who were in the Knesset but are not running, and we have plans for the future. I don't know how that's going to turn out. Some of it will turn out depending on how many people we reach and how strong we get and all other types of factors. But we are in touch with people. Things didn't work out in this election. We were going to be working with somebody and supporting somebody in this election, but it didn't work out. They didn't run, and things just didn't turn out the way we were hoping. But hopefully by the next election that will change. I hope, God willing, I hope it will change. If you agree that after Election Day on Wednesday, we must tell the truth to the Jewish people, no matter who wins on Election Day. And I'm not going to say who's better and who's worse right now. I know that most people are going to say Netanyahu is the lesser of the evils, that the left is worse than him. History doesn't necessarily confirm that view. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's true. I don't know. History, though, shows that the Likud are the ones that have given up most of the land since 1967, that Likud governments are the ones that have done it. So I'm not sure that's true, despite what Baruch Marzel and Bennett and all the other people on the so-called right have been telling us. In any event, we want to tell the truth. And by the way, I think Baruch Marzel and these other guys, I think we would push them to the right. If I were in the debate, if I were part of this whole campaign, and we had a party that was standing for the truth, I think we would, first of all, I think they would run with us. We'd probably run together with them. And we'd run together with them. I don't know. He wants to run with Eli Yishai, so I don't know. Eli Yishai is not even phony right. Eli Yishai supported Oslo. But maybe we'd run with them, maybe we wouldn't, but I know that we would very much influence what happens and what they say and what their positions are. We would actually be changing them. We would change them. Hopefully, God willing, I hope that in the next election that happens. If it doesn't, I hope at least we'll have someone we can support in the next election, and we are in contact with people that we hope we will be able to do that with. But we've got to have, if you agree that the time has come for people who will tell the truth, for people who will tell us that saying that someone who freezes all Jewish building, an anti-Semitic building freeze, only Jews are not allowed to build in Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria, which is what Netanyahu has done, that he's a good guy, that he's a right-winger, that he's the guy we have to be supporting, that has become the right-wing standard? That is not good for the Jewish people. We need someone who will pressure Netanyahu from the right and pressure all Israeli leaders from the right and say, every Jew should be allowed to live anywhere in the land of Israel. If there's a building freeze, it should be against the Arab Nazi enemies of the Jewish people. On them, there should be a building freeze. There should be a campaign to encourage them to leave the land of Israel. That's what we have to say, and no one says that. No one says that, even though many Israelis would respond positively to that message. So let's hope by the next election we have enough support and reach enough people that we can put something together, and next time we'll actually have a choice for a change. But in the meantime, we're in a lot of danger come Wednesday. Wednesday's the day after the election. On Wednesday, when they start with the new government, there's a lot of danger in front of Israel. The possibility, God forbid, of a nuclear Iran, which we're getting closer and closer to, and the possibility of creating a so-called Palestine state, all of these dangers that threaten Israel's very existence. You know that we have warned about this and have told the truth about this. For decades, we've been telling the truth about this, and it is so tragic that our voices are muffled and silenced and that we're in the situation that we're in. It is really, really tragic for the Jewish people. And the Jewish people, you see the price that we're paying. Look at the price we're paying. Terrible price. Help us. Help us to spread the word and wake people up. When people hear the message that I've given you, on this program, when people hear this message in Hebrew, and again, the message that I've just given you with criticism of parties on the phony right, I'm not even delivering that message before the election. But after the election, we have to put pressure on all the politicians and all the leaders, and we have to fight against any attacks on Jewish rights and on the most basic Jewish interests, which all the politicians are against. They're against basic Jewish interests. We have got to have one movement that truly supports Israel, stands for the land of Israel, stands for the Torah view on Israel, and doesn't compromise. We have to have that one voice. We don't have that now. And you can give us that voice if you will not be indifferent and not be apathetic, and you will help us, we can do that. And so everybody, we have to work together as a team for this. When you see us putting up Hebrew or English videos, promote those Hebrew and English videos on Facebook and on YouTube and everywhere else. When you see us put together the great news pages we have two great news pages, one in Hebrew, one in English, with daily updates and news updates, join those news pages. Join them and participate and comment and go to those news pages every day to get news and information and facts that you won't get anywhere else. It's very important that you participate in those news pages that we've set up. JTF.org is the English language news page. Hayamin.org is the Hebrew language news page. We have to promote those news pages because they tell the truth. And we need your prayers, of course. Your prayers are absolutely essential. Without Hashem, without God, we have no hope. Only with the reason in the end that the good guys are going to win one way or another in the end is because, and I don't mean in this election, I mean in the long run, in the scheme of things at the end of history, good things will happen and the good guys will win because Hashem has promised us this. We have to pray to Hashem, very, very important. And last but not least, of course, our big downfall and the downfall of Rabbi Kahana and the downfall of the Jews who wanted to set up a Jewish state before the Holocaust has always been money. We need your financial support. We need it now more than ever. Help us financially. That's very important. The more support we get, the more people we reach, so that as soon as this election is over, we can immediately begin fighting for the truth and exposing the truth and waking people up. It's urgent that we be able to do this. It's absolutely urgent for the future of Israel and the Jewish people. And also, as we're waking people up, we're going to set up a scenario where eventually we're going to have someone good running in the election, where we'll finally have someone good running in the election that we can support. That day will come, God willing. But we want it to come, of course, as quickly as possible. And so we need your help. All the great JTFers who on a regular basis help us with checks, money orders, and cash donations that they send to our post office box. God bless those great JTFers. We need your support. Every check, every money order, every cash donation does make a big difference. God bless you. And the same is true for those who are helping us with online donations. It's very, very easy and convenient if you don't want to have to actually make out a check or a money order or send a cash donation to our post office box. If you find it more convenient to do it online with your credit card, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. You can do that as well. And very easy to do. You just go to hayamin.org, our Hebrew main page, and on top there's a donate button, and you can very conveniently donate to us in a few minutes, very conveniently and easily. And it's something that helps a great deal. On the other hand, for some people, it's actually easier to just to make out a check and put in an envelope and send it to us. That's also, of course, equally helpful. It doesn't matter if we get a check from someone or a money order from someone, or if somebody donates online with their credit card. It makes no difference. It makes no difference. Any way that is convenient for you will help. In the same way, it helps us in the same exact way, and of course, it enables us to reach more people and to do more good for the Jewish people. Help us. Let's work together. If we all work together and we're all determined, we can turn the we can build a movement that will turn the situation around, that will wake people up, because our message does resonate with a lot of Israelis when they hear our message, understand that the dangers we're speaking about are real dangers and that the solutions we're offering are realistic solutions. So give us the chance to reach those people. Give us that opportunity. And you'll be doing a lot of good. You'll be making this a better world. Okay, let's go now to our questions from our great JTFers. Let's see. Let me just make sure everything's okay over here. I'm always checking things, hoping that everything's okay, God willing. Yes, it looks like it's okay. Baruch Hashem, thank God. And we go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think of what UCLA did to a Jewish student by throwing her off the student council because she was, quote, too Jewish, unquote. Thanks. Well, UCLA and all the college campuses have become hotbeds for Nazi anti-Semitism, the worst type of Nazi anti-Semitism now. And the self-hating Jewish students, the Jewish anti-Semites, are sometimes the leaders in inciting Nazi anti-Semitism against the Jewish people, against Israel, the Jewish people. So the college campuses in this country are hotbeds of vicious, vile Jew hatred. And that's why Jews shouldn't be in this country, and they shouldn't be going to college in this country. That's why Jews should make Aliyah, they should live in Israel. And, you know, Jews with self-respect, I don't see how Jews with self-respect would want to give their huge tuition and huge amounts of money to these evil colleges that want to destroy their people and that hate, they detest the Jewish people. They detest the Jewish people. And the Jews have given so much money, all the rich Jews give so much money to these college campuses for this program, for this study, for this thing, for that. I mean, just, it's unbelievable. And they absolutely detest the Jews. And the Jews, and unfortunately, the Jews that support the colleges never learn. They never learn their lesson. The UJA and all the Jewish, self-hating Jewish establishment, so-called philanthropic organizations, you know how much money they give to college campuses? It's unbelievable. People who do this are contributing to Nazi anti-Semites. And they are Nazis, because they support the Arabs who want to destroy Israel. They're supporting Arab Nazis. If you support Nazis, you're a Nazi. And they support Nazis who literally want genocide against the Jewish people, who want to wipe Israel out and exterminate millions of Jews. They are Nazis. Thank you, Joe. And we go now to Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, your thoughts on these popular athletes. Okay, I'm not that familiar with all these athletes, Wandering Samurai. So I don't know. I don't think I can give you that much information as far as my opinion on them. I mean, I've heard of all four of these people that you have here, but I don't know much about them. Okay, the first one is Michael Phelps, who of course is the champion swimmer. I think everybody's heard of Michael Phelps, or almost everybody's heard of Michael Phelps. You know, he was arrested twice for DWI, for driving under the influence. And this is a guy who has had every break under the sun, who is so world famous. Money, fame, everything he has going for him. He has to drive under the influence and get arrested for driving under the influence. He also took a photo of himself with a water pipe. The water pipe is used to smoke marijuana, usually for marijuana. Sometimes some people smoke tobacco in it, but even that's a bad influence on people. You know, and then he apologized afterwards, but he takes photos of himself smoking a water pipe that's used to smoke dope and then gets busted for DWI. I don't think he's a good influence on people. I'm sorry. Brock Lesnar he's the professional wrestler and the martial arts guy. I don't know enough about him to comment. I know he's a wrestler. I know he's a martial arts guy, but I don't know anything else about him. Larry Bird, the basketball player. I know that he's my age. I know he was born like in the same month that I was born. He's born like a couple of weeks. We're only a couple of weeks apart in age. We're both 58 years old, so he's my age. But other than that, I don't really know anything. And he's a white basketball player. But other than that, I don't really know anything about him. So I'm sorry, I can't comment on him. Wayne Gretzky, of course, that's the famous Canadian hockey player. Again, I don't know enough about him to really comment. Sorry, Wandering Samurai, I didn't give you that much this week, but, you know, I just don't know much about these guys. except for Michael Phelps. I think Michael Phelps, I think I gave you my opinion on him. But the other three, I don't really know enough to really comment on them. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. We go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, Edward Hodos, ex-deformed rabbi in Ukraine, accuses Zionist Chabad of trying to take over the world and promoting homosexuality, converted to Christianity, unquote. Well, then this is a vicious, self-hating Jewish traitor. You know, we have no shortage of them. We have Jewish anti-Semites and Jewish traitors who are just vicious, evil enemies of their own people. And this individual obviously is one of those types of people. If all of this is true, and I assume it is, then Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, may his name and memory be obliterated. Thank you, Smash Islam. We go now to Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, worse for Israel, Lewinsky or Herzog, unquote. Okay, when Lewinsky Stinks writes Lewinsky, he means Netanyahu, and Herzog, of course, is Bougie Herzog, the Labor Party leader running against him. I did my whole opening on why I think they're both awful, and it's very hard to say who's worse. If Herzog could carry out what he wants to do, if he would be able to succeed in carrying out his program, then he would be worse, because he wants to go back to the pre-67 lines and absolutely commit suicide. But I don't know if he could carry it out. So left-wing leaders want to do those things, but they sometimes haven't been strong enough to do it, because the people resist when a left-wing leader tries to do that in Israel. So I don't know. The question is, would he be strong enough to actually carry out his evil program? As far as Netanyahu is concerned, he poses as a right-winger, but in the end he winds up implementing a lot of the programs of the left. So it's really hard to say. It's really hard to say who is worse for Israel. They're both absolutely terrible, and these are the types of leaders that must be replaced. And I just can't. I honestly don't know who would be worse. I really think they're both absolutely awful. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, Nation of Islam Mosque or Park East Bathhouse, unquote. Okay, when he says Park East Bathhouse, he's referring to the Park East so-called synagogue, which is the so-called synagogue of Arthur Schneier. His son, Mark Schneier, has one in the Hamptons, has a so-called synagogue in the Hamptons. The Schneiers, Arthur and Mark, are the ultimate examples of Judenrat, Kapo, Jewish traitors of the worst type. The worst type of Jewish traitors. And they are much worse than the Nation of Islam or Farrakhan or the worst enemies we have outside of the Jewish people. Arthur and Mark Schneier, the two so-called Orthodox rabbis, not only do they support Barack Hussein Obama and Hillary Clinton, they invited Jesse Jackson to come and speak and tell their so-called synagogue that the Republicans are Nazis. The Republicans are Nazis. This is Jesse Jackson, who has what he called a sacred covenant with Louis Farrakhan, who praises Hitler, who said, Hitler was a great man. Hitler was a very great man. I like when the Jews call Farrakhan Hitler. Jesse Jackson praises, defends, speaks at the rallies of this black Hitler Farrakhan, defends and supports all the other Arab Hitlers, Muslim Hitlers, and he's invited to this so-called Orthodox synagogue to speak and gets a standing ovation when he says the Republicans are Nazis. I mean, what subhuman scum. And I'm not referring to Jesse Jackson when I say subhuman scum. I'm referring to the Judenrat, Kapo, traitor Jews who support him in these so-called synagogues. And of course they supported Obama. They formed, you know, after David Dinkins, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, the black Nazi mayor of New York, murdered Yonkel Rosenbaum in the Crown Heights pogrom by telling the police to let the blacks go out and slaughter people and stage a pogrom in Crown Heights, after Dinkins committed this act of murder against Yonkel Rosenbaum and was responsible for his murder, you know what Arthur Schneier and Mark Schneier did? They formed a group called Orthodox Rabbis for Dinkins. You know, when Dinkins ran for re-election, even the self-hating Jews of New York City were against him. He was so anti-Semitic that almost 80% of the Jews in New York City voted against him, voted for Rudy Giuliani when he ran for re-election in 1993. So even the left-wing, self-hating, assimilated, intermarried Jews of New York City, even they voted against Dinkins and were against Dinkins, but not Arthur and Mark Schneier. They formed a group called Orthodox Rabbis for Dinkins. and they form similar groups to support Obama and Jesse Jackson. They support anyone who's a Jew hater. What's scum? Scum. And this so-called synagogue is across this, was it right across the street, directly across from the Soviet UN mission? You know how much good we could have done for Soviet Jewry if they had let us use the synagogue to protest for Soviet Jewry? Instead, Arthur Schneier called the police and had us arrested when we tried to protest on behalf of Soviet Jewry, using the synagogue to try to protest on behalf of Soviet Jewry. He called the cops and had Jews dragged out of a synagogue and arrested for trying to protest on behalf of our fellow Jews in the Soviet Union who were being tortured to death in Siberia. That's Arthur Schneier and Mark Schneier. Good Jews he has arrested. He betrays every Jewish cause. He invites Jesse Jackson to come and tell us how the Republicans are Nazis and supports Dinkins, Obama, Clinton, every Jew hater under the sun. And he, by the way, he raises millions and millions of dollars every year. And we've got to beg for nickels and dimes to reach the people of Israel. If we had his budget, I'd be the Prime Minister of Israel. I would have been. If I had had his budget all these years, I'd have been the Prime Minister of Israel by now. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, and I quote, "Most English back Julie Newton." Well, this is a little embarrassing, Lewinsky Stinks, because I don't remember or know who Julie. I don't know who Julie Newton is. It looks familiar, the name, but maybe I'm drawing a blank. I don't know, just a mental block or whatever. But I don't know who she is. So I have to confess my ignorance here, Lewinsky Stinks. And Lewinsky Stinks writes, discuss Wu-Tang Clan. Okay, well, this is something we discussed, I think, about a week or two ago. Someone else asked me about the Wu-Tang Clan. That's, of course, the group of black hip-hop morons, illiterate morons, whose so-called music, it's not music, it's just jungle ranting, of course, jungle ranting with violence, profanity, praising rape, beating women. They have endless legal problems, and the so-called musicians they're involved with are being shot to death, and I mean, just so sick and disgusting. Just a real example of black music in America today. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we go now to Benjamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, please state the official JTF position on the WZC elections. WZC meaning the World Zionist Congress. If religious Zionists took over the whole WZO, would it really help Israel? If Kahanis took over WZO, would that help Israel? The PM of Israel, the Prime Minister of Israel, doesn't have to listen to WZO, so is it even worth having a World Zionist Congress? Unquote. If Kahanis ever took over, Kahanis are not going to take over. They wouldn't allow us to. They would never allow it. If we were getting strong, they would bar us and throw us out if they saw we were getting strong. But if they ever could take over, that would be the end of the world. Nobody would pay attention to it anymore. That would be the end of it. All the funding would stop. Everything else would stop. They'd say, oh, Kahanis have taken over. It's a complete dead end for us. No. The only place where we have a chance to really make a big difference is either by influencing people on the internet, like we're trying to do, by reaching lots of people on the internet, which we do. With our videos and with everything else we do, we reach hundreds of thousands of people. Hundreds of thousands of people are reachable and can be influenced. That's the first thing. And of course, bigger than that, if someday we can get into the Knesset, that would have an impact. That would begin to have a big impact on things. You know, if I were in the Knesset, can you imagine what that would mean? Can you imagine the political earthquake that would lead to? So that would have an influence. This is not going to have an influence because first of all, they won't allow us to get to take over this Jewish establishment organization. And secondly, if we ever did, they would say, oh, that organization has no meaning anymore. Look who took it over. Thank you, Benjamin Yisrael. And we go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, I am no fan of Netanyahu, but unfortunately between him and Isaac Herzog, he is the lesser of the evils, unquote. Maybe. I'm not sure about that, Chicago Jew. I don't know. It's possible. It's possible he is. I don't know. I know that on Iran, he's doing nothing. And Iran is getting closer and closer to building nuclear bombs, and they're getting ready to take all the sanctions off, God forbid. It's just he's a catastrophe on Iran. He talks tough and does nothing. And he's such a coward, it's unbelievable. I mean, when Israel's facing a nuclear holocaust and he's afraid to send in the Israeli Air Force to do what has to be done. I mean, he's just a coward. There's no other word for it. And freezing Jewish building in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. I mean, he's done a lot of harm. Netanyahu has done tremendous harm to the state of Israel over the years. Is he the lesser of the evils? I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe. I could see people arguing that. I could see the other argument, too. Thank you, Chicago Jew. We go now to Goylem, who writes, and I quote, Muslim Pakistan has had nukes for years and hasn't used them. It would be national suicide. Why would nuclear Iran be any more of a threat, unquote? Because Pakistan is run by different types of leaders than Iran. Iranian Muslim leaders are ayatollahs, are fanatic ayatollahs who are committed to mass death and jihad, to becoming shahidim. Okay, so it's a different ideology there. Pakistan is an evil country. Pakistan is an enemy of the United States and Israel. Very dangerous that they have nukes, that's for sure. But on Pakistan's border, they have a giant country called India. And India, with well over a billion people, has 20 or 30 times as many nuclear bombs as Pakistan. And their nuclear bombs, the Indian nuclear bombs, are much bigger and more accurate and more destructive than Pakistan's. So the minute Pakistan starts doing anything with their nuclear bombs, they face the danger of having to deal with India. India is right on their border. If India were not on their border, we'd be in a lot of trouble. In addition to that, the Pakistani leaders are just corrupt, evil leaders that just want to stay in power at any cost. There's a danger, by the way, that they could be overthrown by other leaders who would want to use the nuclear bombs. But right now, they're just a bunch of corrupt, murderous generals. They're Muslims. They hate non-Muslims, but they don't want to commit national suicide right now. The Iranians, on the other hand, are willing to take chances like that. I mean, the Iranians have proven that they're willing. You have any idea what a price Iran has paid economically and internationally because of its nuclear program? If they didn't have this nuclear program, decades ago already, they would have been prosperous. They've given up prosperity. They live in misery and they're putting their people through misery just to have these nuclear bombs. There is no question that the situation in Iran is much more dangerous. Iran is promising us they're going to exterminate Israel. I mean, after what happened, the one lesson we must learn from the Holocaust is that when you have a lunatic dictator that promises to exterminate the Jewish people, you had better take him seriously. That's the one lesson that we certainly must learn from the Holocaust. If we didn't learn that, we learned nothing from the Holocaust. The Iranians have sworn and swear every day they're going to destroy Israel. We're going to give them now the nuclear means to do so? There's no question that Iran going nuclear would be an enormous threat to Israel's very survival and an enormous threat to America as well. No question about that. It's not the same situation as in Pakistan, even though the situation in Pakistan is also bad, but the situation in Iran would be 1,000 times worse. Thank you, Goylem. And we go now to Hiram, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, a dear friend is marrying a girl whose Muslim dad insists that he convert. What would the consequences be? How can it be stopped? Unquote. Well, anybody who converts to that monstrous religion of Islam, of course, is going to be punished very severely in the next world. Islam is a religion that is at war with God. Anyone who wants to destroy the Jewish people and hates the Jews and hates Judaism is at war with God. And Islam is at war with God. Islam wants to exterminate the Jewish people, and Islam wants to destroy Judaism. So, of course, anybody who does that is committing an act of evil beyond all words. How can it be stopped? I don't know. I don't know anything about this individual, so I can't say. But this person will be cursed for eternity if he does something so monstrous. I mean, it would be an unbelievably monstrous act. Anyway, I mean, it's the ultimate act of evil, converting to that monstrous religion. Thank you, Hiram. We go now to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, talk about Vashti. Vashti was the queen of Persia, and she was the wife of Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus was the king of Persia during the time of Purim, and she was his wife. On the seventh day of the king's party, she was said to be one of the most beautiful women ever to live in history. On the seventh day of the king's party, the wife, she was summoned to come to the king's party. He had this huge party that he for 180 days he wanted to celebrate, and he organized a huge party. And on the seventh day, after the 180 days, he had another 7 days. And on the seventh day, he wanted his wife, the queen, who was, again, one of the most beautiful women ever to live. He wanted her to come to the party, and she refused to come. And so as a punishment, she was executed. Anyway, let me start off by saying she was executed as a punishment, and she was replaced by Esther Hamalka. Esther Hamalka is Queen Esther. So Queen Esther wound up replacing her. Now, Vashti was a very evil queen, we're told. She was a queen who used to force Jewish women to disrobe in public and to work on Shabbat. So she was trying to force the Jewish women to give up Judaism and to give up their Jewish beliefs. She used her power as a queen to force Jews to commit sin. So she was a very evil person, and Hashem punished her by creating a situation in which she was executed. Esther Hamalka, Queen Esther, then, of course, replaced her and became the queen of Persia. Dr. Dan writes, two, talk about the intermarriage of Esther and Bathsheba Uriah, unquote. Okay, first of all, Esther Hamalka, she didn't reveal to the Jew-hating king her Jewish background before they were married, because the king was very, very anti-Semitic, just as anti-Semitic as Haman. And then she used her position. The reason she got into that situation is because she used her position to save the Jewish people. That's why she was in that position. She used her position to save the Jewish people. Did she have relations with this king, with this monstrous Jew-hating king? We don't know the answer to that. We don't know what her relationship was, but we know she didn't see him frequently because it says so, you know, that she had to have special appointment, you know, she had to have special circumstances to go in and see the king. So, you know, they didn't see each other much. Did she ever consummate the marriage or have relations with him? That we don't know, but we know that the purpose of this so-called marriage was to put her in a position to save the Jewish people. That was what she eventually did. Intermarriage, of course, is completely forbidden, but she was on a very, very special mission to save the Jewish people under very extraordinary circumstances that you don't have in other cases. This should not be used as an excuse by other people to commit the sin of intermarriage. This is a completely different situation. As far as Bathsheba and Uriah, Bathsheba was not intermarried. Uriah was a convert. He was a ger. He was a convert. He had converted to Judaism before he married Bathsheba, before he met Bathsheba, before he married Bathsheba, so she was not intermarried. Someone who converts to Judaism, a ger who converts to Judaism, is a Jew in every respect. In every way, he's a Jew. And marrying a convert to Judaism is like marrying a Jew. There's no difference. It's perfectly acceptable. So Bathsheba was not intermarried. Dr. Dan now writes, three, what quality did Moses have that Aaron didn't? Same with David versus Yonatan or Jonathan. Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, obviously had to be a great leader who was going to give the Torah to the Jewish people. So he had to be the greatest leader in history to do that. Aharon, his brother, also had great qualities as a leader, but, you know, we all have certain roles that we have to play in the world. God intends for us to all play a certain role. Every one of us has a mission in life. Every one of us has a specific calling in life. The calling for Moshe Rabbeinu, for Moses, was that he had to give the Torah to the Jewish people. He had to be the one who would enable the Jewish people to receive the Torah and to guide the Jewish people, to liberate them from the land of Egypt, to bring them across the Red Sea, to guide them in the desert for 40 years until they enter the land of Israel. This was his mission. This was his calling in life. And of course, he fulfilled it in the most outstanding way. Thank God. Baruch Hashem. He was an unbelievably great leader. Aharon had a different calling. Aharon, there's not that one is better than the other, but Aharon had a different calling. His calling was to be the head of the kehuna, of the priesthood in Israel. He was the Kohen Gadol, the great priest or the high priest. And so each of them had a different role to play. And Bnei Aharon, the sons of Aharon, they're the high priests of today. They, in every generation, they all descend from Aharon, the high priests. The priestly group within the tribe of Levi come from Aharon. They descend from Aharon. That was his calling. That was the role that he had to play. They're both very important roles, but each one was perfect for their particular role, for what they had to do. You know, when you have a situation in which someone, let's say, is brilliant with computers, and someone else is very good in some other area. Let's say you have someone in a movement that's very, very good in computers, and you have someone else who's very good in some other form of technology. Or a better example, in the military, you have certain soldiers that are very, very good in tanks, being part of a brigade of tanks. You have other soldiers who are very good with artillery. You have other soldiers who are very good as pilots. You have others who are very good for the Air Force, who are good as pilots. You have others who would be very good at sea in the Navy. Each one plays their role that is most fitting for them. Or if you have a doctor, you know, one doctor is a cardiologist. He's an expert when it comes to caring for the heart. Another is an expert on the brain. Another is an expert in some other area of the body. There's expertise when it comes to medicine, when it comes to law, when it comes to leadership, when it comes to technology, when it comes to the military. There are different roles to be played, and the same is true with leaders. The same is true with our leaders. David was the perfect king for Israel. He was the king that the Messiah will eventually descend from him, because he was such a great king and so pleased the God of Israel. Yonatan was also a great leader and a great Jew, but the role that he had to play was a different role. Thank you, Dr. Den. And we go now to Angry Chinese Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, "Years ago you commented on Yuri Alexandrovich Besmenov. What's your take on his, quote, car accident, unquote?" I apologize, Angry Chinese Kahanist, but I'm just not familiar enough with the details of what happened to him to be able to comment. I don't know what happened. I don't know the details. You know, I mean, there are sometimes conspiracies that really do take place. We have some conspiracy theorists who come up with conspiracies that are just a figment of their imagination. It depends. I mean, sometimes they're real, sometimes they're not. I don't know enough about what happened to him. I know that he turned against the Soviets, and I know that he was working with the Soviets, and then he turned against them later on in life and defected. And after his defection, he did interviews against them. But I don't know enough about what happened afterwards to be able to tell you what ultimately, whether or not he was in an accident or whether someone murdered him. I don't know. I don't know enough to be able to say. I really don't know the details. Thank you, angry Chinese Kahanist. And we go now to Tzelhar, who writes, and I quote, comment on the Israeli spy, quote-unquote, executed by the Islamic State. Why other Israelis, quote-unquote, joined the Islamic State are allowed to return and receive disability checks for injuries suffered?
They
call Arabs, Arab Muslims who join the Islamic State, they call them Israelis if they live in Israel. You know, Arabs are also called Israelis nowadays. The whole thing is absurd. I don't know this guy that was executed. I don't know anything about him. I mean, I saw his father was interviewed and his father was speaking about him before he was executed. If he went there on his own to join the Islamic State and he had no connection to Israel, which I don't know. It's very questionable. I don't think the Mossad would send him there like that to join. They accused him of being a Mossad agent, of being an Israeli spy. I don't know. The only thing I can say is if Israeli Arab Muslims go there because they want to fight with the Islamic State, they should not be allowed to return to Israel. They should not be allowed to return to Israel. They're joining with a movement and an organization that's committed to the annihilation of the Jewish people. Any group, whether it's the Islamic State or Fatah or Hamas or Hezbollah, Arabs who identify with those terrorist genocidal organizations are enemies of the Jewish people and should be treated like enemies. They should not only shouldn't they receive disability checks, they should be treated like true enemies. Terrorists should be executed. If someone is a terrorist and he joins a terrorist organization, he should be executed. Terrorists should be executed. They should get the death penalty. Thank you, Tzelhar. We go now to... there's some people who say, well, you mean you're going to execute everybody who's... If the United States executes people in Al-Qaeda. The United States just kills them. If someone's in Al-Qaeda, the United States sends people out to kill them. Why can't Israel have the same policy that even Obama has? Even Obama does that. Thank you, Tzelhar. We go now to Yotin, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, I remember you once saying you respected Rabbi Cook, but didn't agree with him on everything. Any examples of where you disagree, unquote? Probably the biggest example is that Harav Cook, who was a great Talmid Chacham, no question about it, and his son, Harav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, another great Talmid Chacham, they had an attitude of loving every Jew. You got to love all your fellow Jews, even if they're the worst, lowest traitors on the face of the earth that are doing terrible harm to the Jewish people. And that's why the political parties that form from them, like the Maftal, wound up supporting David Ben-Gurion, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, who was an absolute Jewish traitor, who destroyed the soul of the Jewish people and brainwashed young Jews to turn against Judaism. He took all the Sephardic Jews and put them in anti-religious schools. He kidnapped the babies of Yemenite Jews. 10,000 Yemenite Jewish babies were kidnapped from their mothers and handed over to other people and put in the black market or sent to anti-religious kibbutzim, and their mothers never saw them again. And the terrible crimes that were committed by Ben-Gurion and the other murderers who took over Israel. Rabbi Cook passed away in the 1930s, but until then he was supporting all of these types of leaders. He supported all of these leaders, as long as they called themselves Zionists, he was supporting them. You have to love all your fellow Jews. And so they never are willing to turn against Jews, even if the Jews are the worst types of vicious traitors. This is not just Rabbi Cook. There are many other strains among the Jewish people in Hasidism and elsewhere that tell us we have to love all our fellow Jews, no matter what, they're good. That's just not true. There are some people who are just vicious, evil beasts, and we have to curse them and hate them and destroy them. And that's why we pray against them three times a day. V'lemal shinim al tihi tikva. We pray against them three times a day. They're just evil, vicious, murderous people. They are not only just as bad as our Gentile anti-Semites, but worse than Gentile anti-Semites, because a Gentile anti-Semite, at least they're hating someone from another people. The Jewish anti-Semite is doing this to their own brothers and sisters. So they're even worse. And Rabbi Cook and his son, Rabbi Tzvi Yehuda, they preached this universal love, all your fellow Jews, no matter what. And this is a very dangerous thing. Because of this, people didn't resist in Gush Katif and didn't fight back when they came to expel Jews. Because we can't know they're Jewish soldiers. We have to love our fellow Jews. You have to love people who are coming to destroy your home, expel you by force with brutality, and hand over your land to Muslim Nazi terrorists that want to exterminate you? I mean, you can't even resist when they come to do that. You can't at least physically refuse to leave and at least resist. At least with, I'm not saying resist with gunfire. I'm not saying that, but at least resist physically. At least make it so that they have to drag you away, kicking and screaming at the very least. And if they had tens of thousands of Jews doing that, we could have stopped the expulsion in Gush Katif. But we can't do this as long as we're going to have this philosophy that no matter what Judenrat betrayals these people commit, even when they collaborated with the Nazis in the Holocaust, there were Jews who collaborated with the Nazis in the Holocaust, we still have to love our fellow Jews no matter how evil, immoral, or despicable they are. This is part of the philosophy that really is part of Rabbi Cook's philosophy. I mean, he absolutely adored some of these worst types of self-hating Jews. And I think that was something very unfortunate. That's why we Kahanists, we don't adhere to that. If someone is an anti-Semite, an enemy of the Jewish people, and they're Jewish, that's even worse than a Gentile anti-Semite. And that's something Rabbi Cook and his son did not recognize, in my view. Thank you, Yotin. And we're going now to EB22, who writes, and I quote, "What is your opinion of New Hampshire Senator Kelly Ayotte?" I don't know if it's Ayotte or Ayotte. I think it's Ayotte. She's a complete phony. she attacks Ted Cruz viciously. She was in favor of amnesty. She's a phony. She's a phony. I can't stand her. She's a complete phony. EB now writes, "If the current scandal ends Hillary's presidential bid, who do you think becomes the favorite in 2016? Unquote. If that ever happened, I don't think that's going to happen, but I hope it does, God willing. But if that happened, I don't think they'd be a favorite right now, as far as I can see. I think it would be wide open. And then I think the race is wide open for both the Democrat and the Republican nominations, if that happens. Hillary now is the favorite to win the Democrat nomination, and she's the favorite to be elected president in 2016. God forbid. She is the favorite now. Right now, she's the favorite. But if she somehow, for some reason, were out of it, then I think the race is wide open. Thank you, EB. And we go now to Secular Believer, who writes, and I quote, "Chaim, what is the best possible outcome of Israel's election? Not a Bibi fan, but Labor might bring Arab Nazis into government," unquote. Secular Believer, actually, this is my whole opening was about this. And I've tried to answer that question. I've gotten that question from other questioners, too, from other people as well. And I've already said that I think there are a lot of pluses and minuses. Actually, they're only minuses. They're only bad things coming from both sides, from Bibi and from Likud and from the Labor. And there are reasons to believe that Bibi is worse than Labor, and there are reasons to believe that Labor is worse than Bibi. So you just have to pick and choose. If you listen to my opening, you'll see all the arguments that I made. Thank you very much, Secular Believer. And we go now to Righteous Indian Gentile, who writes, and I quote, "What would you like to say to those who say Iran can be a formidable ally in the fight against ISIS and Sunni jihadism?" Unquote. Oh, that's so... This is precisely why we can't beat Islamic terrorism, because there are always people telling us these Muslims are good and these Muslims are bad and these Muslims are moderate and these Muslims are extreme. It's baloney. The Sunnis, the Shiites, the people who believe in that religion are all enemies of humanity. A nuclear Iran would be good because of ISIS? You know, this is the, you know, what has, by the way, what has the Islamic State done that's so terrible so far? And they killed other Muslims. Okay, they've been slaughtering their fellow Muslims, yes. And they've been slaughtering, and they have beheaded Americans and others who go there who support the Muslims, by the way. Every single person they've killed supports the Muslims. Nobody's there. You haven't had any righteous people, who have gone there, who have been beheaded by them. Maybe some of the Christians who live there who have been killed. Okay, you possibly can argue that they certainly didn't deserve to be killed. But they are not a mortal threat to us right now, the Islamic State. If anything, the 99% of the people they're killing are their fellow Muslims. And what are they doing? They're killing people with guns and knives and swords. Iran is on the verge of getting nuclear bombs. We're going to let Iran get nuclear bombs to fight against the Islamic State? Iran is a million times worse than the Islamic State. A million times worse. And if Iran gets nuclear bombs, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Syria, Jordan, Turkey, all of these countries, Iraq, all of these countries are going to want to go nuclear. There'll be a massive arms race among all the Muslim countries to acquire nuclear bombs. That's going to be good. That would be good for the world. That'd be the world's biggest nightmare. That'll be the ultimate nightmare for the world. I mean, people, how could anybody even think something so absurd? And you know, that animal, Lindsey Graham, whom Sheldon Adelson and other idiotic Jews are now toying with supporting for president, that animal, Lindsey Graham, said we should support Iran because Iran is going to fight against the Islamic State. I mean, this is, you know, with leaders like this, with people that say things that are so insane and so stupid, it's beyond belief. In a mental asylum, people would have more common sense than to say something like this. I mean, in a mental asylum, people would have more common sense than to say what Lindsey Graham is saying. The fact is, Iran is now the biggest threat, because giving them nuclear bombs, first of all, if they get nuclear bombs, they may use those nuclear bombs, and there may be a nuclear holocaust. They themselves may use them. In addition to that, a dozen other Muslim countries are going to pursue nuclear bombs, and there'll be a massive nuclear arms race if they get nuclear bombs. It'll be completely out of control. It's the ultimate nightmare for the world. Thank you, righteous Indian Gentile. We go now to Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, can you give us a Dvar Torah on this week's parasha? Thank you, unquote. Okay, this week's parasha is parashat Ve'yakel Pekudei. So it's two parashiot, it's two weekly Torah portions this week. They're together. And you know, basically what we have here is a very odd situation. Because this week's parashiot, these two weekly portions that we read this week, that we read this week, this Shabbat in the synagogue, they both speak about Hamishkan, the tabernacle that was built in the desert. And why is that so important, the tabernacle that was built in the desert? Because it's the blueprint for the building of Beit HaMikdash, Beit HaMikdash being the Holy Temple. What they did for HaMishkan is also done, the same rules and the same halachot, generally speaking, for Beit HaMikdash, for the Holy Temple. So as a blueprint, it's very important. But something very odd happens. The Torah is so careful not to repeat things. The Torah doesn't have a single extra word or letter, not one extra letter anywhere. The Torah is so precise. There's not one extra letter anywhere. Every letter, every word is precise. And the Torah is very, very sparing. Everything is very shortened, and it's basically a book of headlines as to what the commandments are. It doesn't explain to you how you keep the commandments. It's just headlines without even telling us how to keep the commandments. So it's very, very shortened, the Torah. Very, 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 very shortened and very, very sparing in terms of the words and the letters that are used. Not even one extra letter. And a Torah that is, where the language is so careful not to have even an extra letter anywhere, That same Torah repeats five times the same thing on what we're supposed to do for the Mishkan, for the tabernacle. Five times, it's just repeated over and over again, everything that we're doing in the Mishkan. And of course the clothing for the Kohanim and all the clothing and all the other things that go into the avodah, the service that we have, the worship that we have in the Mishkan and later on in Beit HaMikdash, in the temple. This is repeated in five different parashiyot, in five different weekly Torah portions, word for word. Almost word for word. And repeated five times. Why would the Torah repeat something five times when the Torah is so careful about not even having one superfluous letter anywhere, not everything being shortened and made as shortened as possible? The version is as shortened as possible, and yet here they repeat five times, they repeat the same thing. In five different parashiyot, we read the same thing over and over again, five times. Why would that be? One of the reasons is to show us the enormous importance and centrality of Beit HaMikdash. How unbelievably important and central Beit HaMikdash is. Beit HaMikdash, meaning the Holy Temple, is where God communicates with humanity, with the Jewish people and with humanity. People that went to Beit HaMikdash, people that were going to the Holy Temple, had prophetic experiences. Tremendous prophetic experiences. This is where you have Sha'ar HaShamayim, the gates to heaven on earth. The rules of heaven exist, and the world to come exist in Beit HaMikdash. This is a place where once it's rebuilt, we're again going to have prophecy. We're again going to be able to communicate with Hashem, with God. So this is the central, this is a central theme. This is so important. This is the centrality of this to everything we're doing, to our whole purpose in life, is so great that every last detail has to be communicated in one parasha after another. Five parashiyot in a row, five different Torah portions. It's repeated again and again. Now, of course, there are different circumstances each time. One, it's explaining what has to be done. Another time, it's explaining what they did do. Another time, it's explaining how they brought it all to Moshe Rabbeinu. But they could have said they brought everything that they built to Moshe Rabbeinu. Instead of repeating everything in detail over again, they brought this and they brought that and they brought this. Instead, it repeats everything all over again to show the enormous importance, the enormous centrality of this to the Torah. And so when we speak about Jews going up to the Temple Mount to say their prayers, and when we speak about the importance of Jewish control over the Temple Mount, there is no issue that is more important than this. There is no issue that is more central to our quest for the final redemption of the Jews and the world than the rebuilding of the Holy Temple and prayers on the Holy Temple and once again establishing the worship on the Holy Temple. There is nothing more central, nothing more important. And the Torah is bringing us that message very clearly. And that we see in this week's parasha. We see that in this week's parasha in a way that is so demonstrable that it absolutely sticks out and proves to us how important this issue is, that it is the central issue. It's probably the central issue of our time. Thank you, Kalman. And we go now to Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, why are people called the children of God? Okay. You didn't complete the question, so I don't know exactly what you're referring to. I think you probably tried to complete the question and by mistake, it uploaded already. People that are called the children of God, first of all human beings are the children of God. So I'm not sure exactly. What your question is referring to. Although there are there certainly are distinctions made. There certainly are categories and distinctions made. Very serious distinctions made. Thank you, Maimonides. And I want to thank everybody else for another program that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, Shalom.